I said to you earlier tonight that I'd be speaking a little bit to this painting over to my right and your left here. As I said earlier, it's by the Dutch master Rembrandt, painted in 1646. It's a bit of a favourite of mine. It captures the scene that was read out earlier today, tonight, from our Advent reading that Del read out. A few things I really love about this painting. The first thing is the use of the light that Rembrandt uses. You can see just over here where my pointer is, there's a lantern there, but that's not where the light is really coming from. The light's coming from the manger. And you can see on the faces of the people, Mary and Joseph and the shepherds gathered around, the light from the manger is shining up into their faces. Rembrandt's alluding to something that Jesus would say later in his life, that he would say, "I am the light of the world." There's a few other things about this painting which I really like and just like to highlight. Rembrandt includes eight shepherds in this painting. Three are gathered around here, and there's some up around the back there. It's really quite a domestic scene. You've got a young boy, and you probably can't see it, but the young boy's holding a pet dog. Behind him, there's a lady who's carrying a child. Down at the front here, you've got two shepherds. One has his arms outstretched, the other with her hands coming together, both in gestures of prayer. Church tradition said at the time when Jesus was born and the night that he was born, there was a bird there in the stable, and the bird was singing all night, singing out its own praises to God. And Rembrandt includes the songbird up in the painting up there above the manger. Another aspect of this painting which is really interesting, and it's hard to make out, this was the best quality one I could get, but up here there's a cross in the rafters. And Rembrandt's also alluding to that which Jesus would do later, that which he would come to do. This is a masterpiece. A masterpiece by a master painter. And when you think about the circumstances around Jesus' birth, it's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it? I mean, the story around it is just unbelievable in some ways. Unbelievable in the right sense. You've got the fact that he was in Bethlehem, for starters. Mary and Joseph were from Galilee, far away, but Herod had put together this census and they had to go back to the town which their ancestors had come from, so they had to travel to get to Bethlehem. Now, this is all well and good and would seem an unusual set of circumstances, other than it was predicted in the Old Testament, some 600 or 700 years earlier. You've got the fact that when Mary found out she was pregnant, she was visited by an angel, Gabriel, nonetheless. You've got the fact that when Joseph found out Mary was pregnant and he was pretty concerned, and probably justifiably so, he had a dream and an angel visited him in his dream. You've got the fact that the Magi followed a star from the Far East, travelled hundreds and hundreds of miles to come and worship the infant Jesus, bringing gifts of gold, frankincense and myrrh. And you've got the fact that on the night that Jesus was born, there were some shepherds out in a lonely paddock, and the angels showed up there. And they took their direction and came and visited Jesus. Now, this is mind-blowing when you think about it. But it's even more mind-blowing when you consider the society to which Jesus entered into. The society of Jesus' day was what we now know as the Roman society, and within the Roman society there were seven different classes, seven different levels. The highest class was Caesar, and he was the only one that was in that class, and Caesar was considered a god, and so much so that whenever he walked into a new room there would be 24 of his followers, and as he walked into that new room they would have to say, "Holy is the Lord." Everywhere Caesar went they worshipped him. He was considered the king of the kings. Below Caesar, the next class was the Senate. Now, the Senate was made up of 600 politicians, powerful and influential men who governed the various provinces of Rome. Below the Senate was the equestrians. This was the business class. They had great wealth, and their wealth brought them influence, and they made sure, working alongside the Senate, that all the things were put in place that needed to be put in place in order that society ran well and smoothly, and of course benefited themselves personally. Below the equestrians was the dicurians. These guys oversaw the cities. They were the provincial governors, the city politicians that made sure things worked okay in the cities. These first four classes, four out of the seven classes of the Roman Empire, made up only 3% of the Roman population. But they had all the power and all the influence. The next three classes, the next one below them was the Roman citizen. The Roman citizen was part of the working class, probably a skilled worker, had rights as a Roman citizen. As long as he behaved himself and kept himself in good order and didn't upset too many people, he could earn a living for his family, provide for his family and live a relatively good life. Below this Roman citizen was the freedman. The freedman was similar to the Roman citizen. He just didn't have quite the same rights as the citizen. Maybe a semi-skilled or unskilled worker, but again, he was relatively free. He could go about and provide for his family if he needed to. And then below the freedman, you had the slave. And someone would fall into slavery if they'd done the wrong thing, or they'd gotten themselves into debt, or their family had done the wrong thing or got themselves into debt, and they were sold into slavery for a period of time in order to repay the debt or the issue that they got in trouble with. Now, what's really interesting about the Roman Empire and the way they structured their society is, unlike other societies or similar societies of that day, is that within the Roman Empire, you could move up and down the societal ladder. In fact, the whole culture was built on climbing ladders. If you did the right thing, if you knew the right people, if you said the right things, if you worked hard, you might be able to just climb up the next rung of the ladder. The Roman Empire was a place where people found their identity, their sense of worth in their title, in their position, in the wealth that they had. And this causes me to ask the question, what about our society today? What is it that we find our identity in? Maybe it is our title or our role, that which we do. Maybe it is the size of our bank account. Maybe it is our address, where we live. Maybe it's the car we drive. Interestingly, like in the Roman Empire, in our society, you can climb the ladder too. If you have the right stuff, if you know the right people, if you've seen doing the right things, if you're able to win the respect of others, we're told that you'll be all right, you'll feel good about yourselves, you'll have a sense of fulfillment. Now, there's a problem with all of this. And the problem is that if you have a brand new car, it feels good for a bit, but after a while it gets old. You might have the really nice house. It's on trend, is what they say these days. And everything about it looks great, but then the trends change and it gets too hard to keep up. Maybe you've got the right status because you're in a certain role and it gives you a sense of fulfillment and it's all going well, and that's all well and good until you're not in that role anymore. One day you might retire. One day you might lose that role. And then when you look at what we have before us tonight, this scene of the baby Jesus, we look at how God himself came. He didn't come climbing ladders. He came climbing down. From the highest of the high position, he came to the lowest of the lows. From a throne in heaven to a manger in a stable, surrounded by smelly animals and lowly shepherds. He doesn't come as the ruling elite, he comes as a slave. It says something about the heart of God, doesn't it? As we reflect on the Christmas story tonight, there's an opportunity for us to think about what's really important. There's an opportunity to think about what it is that we're investing ourselves into. Is it things that are going to last, or are they things that will fade away? There's an opportunity tonight to ask what shapes my identity, what gives me that sense of purpose and fulfillment. In the book of Ephesians chapter 2 verse 10, the apostle Paul writes about us. He says, we are his workmanship. Now, this idea of workmanship is a really interesting word, and it's debated around the actual best translation for that. And most Bibles translate the word workmanship, but an alternative way and arguably a better way to translate the word that is used for workmanship is the word masterpiece. We are his masterpiece. So as we soak in Rembrandt's masterpiece tonight, remember, you are his masterpiece. 2,000 years ago, Jesus came into a world that was messed up. He came into a world where there was suffering, where there was stress, where there was anxiety, and there was terror. He came into a world where there was brokenness all around. Sounds a bit familiar, doesn't it? And he came to bring restoration. He came to make right that which had gone wrong. He came to complete his creative work. And his work continues to this day. Because we are his masterpieces. It's in him that we find purpose and fulfillment. It's in him that we can live with peace in our hearts. It's in him that we're able to become a better version of ourselves. It's in him that our identity is shaped. It's in him that we become the person that he's created us to be. We're his masterpieces.